Welcome to Sports Central. I'm Rick Drewer.
I'm Phil Fechner. We even got that right today, Rick.
We did indeed. Yes, after a slight hiccup last week.
Yes. Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you and to our listeners.
Yes, indeed. How's the test cricket going, Rick? Give us a bit of a...
Well, I think it's probably fair to say that it's been a pretty one-sided affair. And putting it bluntly, we've thrashed the Englishmen. And we'll continue to do so in this test, and so therefore it's going to be 4-0 or 3-0, and Sydney rain sometimes interferes with things. But I think we need to put the whole thing into perspective. There's people getting carried away with how good this Australian side has been performing, but I think we need to balance that concept and measure them against the fact that many people far wiser than myself have considered and predicted this English test team that is touring Australia at the moment to be the weakest English test side that has ever arrived on our shores. And to be honest, and we've got some good English friends, we all have, they've played like it. They are a very ordinary side.
Really only been competitive a couple of sessions, haven't they, in the whole, you know, well, in the fifth test now, so in the... You know what, three or four sessions, probably they've been competitive, haven't they? And that's about it.
That's right. And it's not only their lack of depth, but their big name players.
Well, Root can't get 100.
That's right. And the fact is that none of them have performed well. You know, their quick bowlers, they did perform reasonably well with the pink ball in Adelaide, Anderson. But they really have only, as you said, they've played in sessions. Mm. And they've been unreliable. You know, Alastair Cook's, okay, he's made 200 on an absolute dead flat wicket, but that's the only runs he's made.
That's right.
And he's one of the great players of the world, except that he's probably getting towards the twilight of his career. And they've been intimidated by our quicks. There's no doubt about that.
They reckon this is the strongest bowling lineup we've ever put in an Australian side. But Lillian Thompson and... I mean, Hughesy and, you know, they had some Gary Gilmore and there were some damn good players back then.
Yeah, I think there's a dramatic over-exaggeration of how good these guys are.
Rodney Hogg is another one.
Well, that's right. And although Stark, Hazelwood and Cummins are intimidating this English, very average test team, you know, with all due respect to these three guys, you know, I think I'd much prefer to be... putting Lily Thompson, as you've said, Lenny Pascoe,
yeah,
all
Hoggy
those guys.
Or,
that's
yeah,
right.
Wow.
You know, to say this is one of the greatest fast bowling attacks of all time, I've got a feeling that we're getting carried away with the fact that we're winning a series so easily.
What about, we go to South Africa soon, don't we? Will
we
that
do.
Test us out? Or
test us out? I think that's going to more than test us out. I think all these commentaries about how good this side is and will be need to be put on hold until we've finished the tour of South Africa. I think there's two things. One is, A, they have got a bowling attack as good as ours, if not, and as quick as ours, if not quicker. Secondly, they've got a batting list of their top six, which is stabilised and consistently better than ours. And the fact is that unlike the Englishmen, who've had to put up with us bouncing out the bottom order, and there's some questions about how many bounces you're allowed and using intimidatory tactics, whereas they won't dare do that in South Africa because they'll bounce our bottom half out just as anything we give them, they'll give it back to us at least as much as.
Now, we were talking just before, you said there's a new rule in about bounces or bouncing out, trying to bounce the opposition out.
And yes, there is. And it's a very recent rule. They rewrote... and it came out only for the beginning of the new season, they completely revamped the entire rules of cricket, which originate out of the MCC in England, and they had included a rule in relation to short-pitched and intimidatory bowling. Now, the words, I haven't got the words in front of me, but it includes whether batsmen are wearing protective gear or not, and also whether, in the opinion of the umpire, they are putting the health and well-being of the batsman in danger in relation to his skills. So, you know, on one hand you can say, well, listen, you know, the bloke who's walking in at number 11 in a test match is a first-class test cricketer, but he's not necessarily a first-class test cricket batsman. And the rule is designed a bit like occupational health and safety. And the amount of short-pitch bowling that the Australians have been, I'm an Australian lover and supporter, but how they haven't been called, right, the rule actually says that in the opinion of the umpire, if they deem the ball to be short-pitched and intimidatory, they are to call it as a no ball and to give an official warning to the bowler that it is a no ball for intimidatory bowling. And if, in fact, he's to bowl another one, he is banned from bowling for the rest of the innings. Now, and they've just turned a blind eye to that.
That's
so
unbelievable.
Yeah, and so, you know, in our league, in the Broslin Light League, we are asked to carry that out without question. And since the players have been made aware of it and we warn them before the game starts, there's been no account of that happening. But, I mean, it is ridiculous. They're bowling four or five out of six balls.
So this would be from the Phil Hughes incident, but, I suppose, brought in to cover that.
All part of that.
Yeah.
All part of that.
Okay.
And although, and it's a sort of, what the Australians are using at the moment is a tactic almost like a poor man's body line theory, but which they had to rewrite the rules over after the Jardine and so forth. But they rewrote the rule there partly to limit the number of fielders behind square leg to two, because they were having virtually all the fieldsmen in catching positions on the leg side and then bowling. And so they've tried it. But really, apart from the fact that you only got two behind square leg, the Aussies are doing that to the pom tail every test match.
All right, well, you've played first-class cricket. How often would a, let's say, an opening bowler touch the bat at practice?
Oh, well, in the old days, of course, it was basically you were a wicket keeper. If you happened to be lucky enough to bat a bit, you could. And as a bowler, you're a bowler. Whereas there's been a movement towards that they want people to be able. I mean, the argument, I suppose, is that because the whole team has to bat, then it's nice if someone can bat. But the reality is that you're never going to have a number 9, 10 or 11 who can bat and have the skills that someone who's batting in the first three or four. And so to say that you have got a right to bowl as short at the tail as you have at the top end of the ladder, it really makes no sense.
So you're saying years ago they wouldn't have touched the bat, basically, but now they probably do, a bit more like your Pat Cummings and your bowlers now, your Starks. I mean, they can bat a bit.
Yes, that's where I guess there is added pressure on the umpires to make that interpretation. But the rule doesn't say you can't bowl short pitch bowling at a number 11. What the rule really says is you can't bowl short-pitched intimidatory bowling at a batsman who the umpires consider haven't got the skills to handle it. And so it's a grey area, but I think when you're bowling short-pitched...
Because how, as an umpire, how do you determine whether he's got the skill or not? I mean...
It's not like you can get a measuring tape and measure it and say, well, he's got it and he hasn't. But I think if you're an experienced cricketer, and hopefully, particularly at test level, they're experienced test umpires, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to work out whether a bloke can hold the bat or not. It probably sounds airy-fairy, but I don't think it's that hard. I mean, you've only got to look at a bloke like Jimmy Anderson, and he can't bat.
Yeah.
You know, he has been one of the great all-time test fast bowlers, but he wasn't in the room when they started to teach batting, I don't think.
Yeah, well, see, I remember years ago, your Lenny Pascoe's and your Merv Hughes, I mean, they weren't batsmen at all. But now our fast bowlers can hold the bat. Yeah. You know, they can make 40 or 50. I mean, Broad made, I don't know, 30 or 40 today in the test that's currently going, the fifth test. And, I mean, you know, they seem to be able to hold the end up.
Well, I think what's happened is because somebody worked out, which they should have done a long time ago, that since you have 11 people who all have to walk out and take strike, that now at the junior levels, whether you're a fast bowler or a spin bowler, you are also not only encouraged, but you are taught to bat.
Mm.
I mean, it doesn't mean you're going to be a great batsman, but you've got to be a bit of an all-rounder.
Yeah. Because, I mean, even just for safety's sake, basically, you know, how to dodge a bouncer or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we won't carry on with that. What about Maxwell and the ODIs?
Well,
what do you think of that?
Boy, oh boy.
Been axed.
This one-day squad that they've announced, it's staggering, I think.
Got to go away and make runs or something,
The funny thing is that I don't know. It would, from the understanding I've got, Glenn Maxwell is a slightly complicated character, I think, and he's got an interesting track record. But when he was axed last year, he was asked to go away and make runs and to change his habits. And to his credit, he went and trained every day.
Mm-hmm.
And he's opened the Sheffield Shield season with a double 100, another 100.
Who's that against?
Oh, he made the double 100 against South Australia.
Really? Yeah. But he wouldn't have been the only one this year that would have done that.
Oh, that's very cruel. but the thing is that he's done absolutely everything that he was asked to do. You know,
he's a bit like Tim Payne when he got picked, wasn't it?
Well, Tim Payne got picked coming out of the blue because they did consider him to be the best wicketkeeper, but he wasn't actually wicketkeeping for his state, let alone Australia at the time.
He's actually done all right, though, hasn't he, since he's...
Well, I mean, he was recognised. We won't go through his injuries.
It was a bit of a
joke, though. It certainly came out of the blue. I don't think too many people saw it coming, particularly since he wasn't even keeping for Tasmania at the time. The other one, though, getting back to your question about the one-day international side, is that although you can't quite say that Maxwell was replaced or not chosen ahead of, it would seem that Chris Lynn, the Queenslander,
he is
the guy who basically has been chosen ahead of Maxwell. Now, in a sense, that's also a contradiction of the concept that only people who are 100% fit should be playing for Australia, no matter what form of the game. Because Chris Lynn is coming out of a shoulder reconstruction, is playing T20 or Big Bash at the moment.
You know what that is?
Yes. But evidently he can he has to field underarm, etc.
Oh, okay.
So although at his fitness peak certainly warrants being in the side, they've actually picked a bloke who is not 100%
coming
fit
rehab.
And ahead of the guy who's gone out and done everything that the Australian Cricket Australia asked him. So there's a bit of interesting
concept. Now, we're fastly running out of time, but I do want to hear a joke out of you.
All right. Rick. Well, listen, did you hear about the bloke who arrived at cricket practice late?
Late.
He arrived late, and the coach was absolutely raving furious.
As
he said,
would be.
You'd expect. He said, "Why are you so late?" And the player said to him, "Well, I was late when I started out from home." And the coach said, "Well, why didn't you start out earlier?" And he replied, "Because it was too late to start early."
I'm almost confused out of that.
That doesn't surprise me.
All right. Well, we've covered all of the tests. We've covered the ODI. Yeah. And I think we're just about probably time up.
I think it is. So
first one for the new year, Rick.
It is. And just as before we go, I do think that we should reserve judgment on this Australian test side at least until they've played the South Africans. And then bear in mind that next summer we've got to face the Indians, who are actually rated number one as well. We might not have as many bragging rights as we seem to be talking about at the present time. Anyway, until next time, this is Rick.
This is Phil.